You know, we often think of our favorite drugstore as being just down the street, around the corner. But have you ever stopped to think how close to you your druggist really is?
Better get them apple seeds in the ground, Johnny.
Well, you think of him in
Brennan, ladies and gentlemen.
Right off. You think of him in emergencies, then you'll know he'll be on hand. He's always ready to serve you and all the people there in your community.
I raised that horse and she was a colt. I know she can win the big race.
The shelves of the drugstore are well stocked with famous brand name.
Walter Brennan again, ladies and gentlemen.
Miss Lucy! Miss Lucy! Lightning done won the Derby!
Well, you got me.
Walter Brennan, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, I see here, you guys. I'm the boss here, see? What I say goes.
Edward G. Robinson, ladies and
gentlemen. No, Walter Brennan, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
Hey, we have a gentleman. The horses are at the starting gate.
Miss Lucy! Miss Lucy! White has done won the Derby!
Let me get them apple seeds in the ground, Johnny.
Well, it's time now for Reporter's Rendezvous, the award-winning program in which members of our Bob and Ray News staff fire questions at some of the nation's political leaders. Our guest today is Congresswoman Beatrice Montcalm Storch, and the members of our panel are Mr. Wallace W. Ballew and Mr. Arthur C. Skirmerhorn. Congresswoman Storch, I assume that you've had occasion to meet the panel members before in Washington.
Well, if I remember correctly, they were the ones who covered the 1953 inauguration and then found out later that their microphones weren't plugged in.
Yes, I believe they got quite a laugh at the National Press Club about that.
Well, everybody thought they were a couple of idiots. That's what they thought.
Well, now, those little technical problems, of course, come up in radio once in a while. But I believe we're ready to begin today's questioning with Arthur Skirmerhorn.
For Congresswoman Storch, there was a Rivers and Harbors bill up before the last session of Congress that provided funds for dredging the Missouri between Grand Island and North Platte, Nebraska. Now, your committee cut that particular provision out of the bill. Why was that?
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm on the post office committee. We didn't have any Rivers and Harbors bill. Who is that fathead in
there? Well, that's Mr. Skirmerhorn. He's the chief of our Washington bureau.
Seems like a complete fool.
Now I see that Wally Ballew has his hand up there. Go ahead, Wally.
Congresswoman, in your campaign for re-election this year, I notice that all of your speeches have avoided the states' rights issue. Do you care to comment on that?
Well, I'm not running for re-election this year, and I haven't made any speeches at all.
Mr. Skirmerhorn?
Congresswoman, I know that you have three fine sons back home in Michigan. Would you advise them to go into politics?
Well, you seem to be a little perplexed by that one, Congresswoman.
Well, I am. For one thing, I'm not from Michigan. I'm from Oklahoma. For another thing, I don't have any children. And as a final point, I'm not married.
Hardly, I'm wondering if you might not have pulled out the wrong biographical file for this week's program.
No, this woman is obviously trying to cover up something. Here's the file right here.
Well, this is the file on Congresswoman Bloomshot of Michigan.
Well, who's that old bat up there
this
now?
This is Congresswoman Storch of Oklahoma. Don't talk that way.
All I know is that I pulled out the file you told me to get. I know that.
I told you no such thing. This has all the earmarks of another fine mess you've gotten us into.
Well, if that's your attitude, this is certainly the last show I'm going to work with you.
Well, that suits me just fine.
Well, those are the same ones that bollocked up the inauguration. I'm sure of it.
Well, now we want to thank you for being with us, Congresswoman Storch, and invite you all to join us again next week on Reporters' Rendezvous, when our guest will be Mr. Gabriel Fordyce of the Pure Food and Drug Administration. Our panel members for that show will be selected at a later date.
Sports fans, this is Biff Burns in the sports room. We're all set to take a regular look at the highlights and sidelights of the world of sport. We have a very special guest at our microphone today, the home pro as well as defending champion in the big golf tournament coming up here next week. His name is Ernie Shaker. And Ernie, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the sports room.
Thank you very much, Biff, and greetings to golf lovers around the country.
Ernie, we want to spend most of our time here talking about the big tournament that's coming up. It's being held at your home course this year, I understand.
That's right, Biff, and I was pleased as punch when Lonesome Hollow was picked as the tournament site. Every pro likes to play his own course, as you realize. You get used to the layout, the roll of the greens. I just think it's a distinct advantage to be able to play a course that you're familiar with.
Well, from what I hear, you'll need every advantage you can get in this year's tournament. Some of the greatest pros in the business are entered, aren't they?
That's right, Biff. Lefty Peterson, the Southern Open champ, has already filed his application. We're expecting several of the top pros from the West, too.
Well, getting back to the course itself for a moment, what would you say is the toughest hole at Lonesome Hollow, Ernie? The hole where the tournament may be won or lost?
Well, I figure that the real man killer is the seventh hole, Biff. That's where you have to shoot up an incline and then through the windmill. The windmill is spinning around all the time, of course, and your shot has to be perfect. I've never seen that hole made one, naturally, and many's the time that seasoned pros have taken five or six on it.
I see. Any other particularly tough holes that figure to give the tournament entries a lot of trouble?
Well, the 14th is no picnic, Biff. Now, that's a hole where we give a free game if you make it in one. And it's through a drain tile and down a narrow alley between two pools of water to the cup. Now, if you hit it right, you're in no trouble, but you get just a bit off to one side or the other, and watch out.
Certainly sounds like no place for a Sunday golfer like myself.
It's tough, Biff, real tough.
Well, anyway, certainly want to thank you for dropping by here and chatting with us, and I know that you're going to have a great tournament, one that all the fans will want to get out and see.
Well, we're hoping for a big turnout, Bob, and that's at the Lonesome Hollow Miniature Golf Course on Burkett Road.
Good enough, Ernie, and this is your old pal Biff Burns saying that until next time. This is Biff Burns saying so long. After we go off the air here today, Ray and I are going to have the pleasant job of picking our annual beauty contest winner, the young lady who will reign as Miss Bob and Ray of 1956-7. We've invited the three regional finalists to drop by the studio today for an interview, and I see they've just arrived. Let's have the first girl there. You are Miss...
I'm Miss Bob and Ray from New Hampshire. I'm the New England regional winner.
I have your name on the card. You are Laverne Shotney from Manchester, New Hampshire. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm being put up at the Bob and Ray Hotel, along with the other finalists. And we're certainly getting shabby treatment over there, too. They've put us six in the room. We're stacked up like cordwood.
Yes. The hotel is a little crowded at this time of year, and you only have one more night over there. Incidentally, let me wish you a lot of luck in the final judging, Laverne.
Thank you.
And let's have our next finalist real quick. I see by the button you're wearing that you're Miss Utah. Hmm?
Hi, Miss Bob and Ray from Utah. Yes, the regular Miss Utah is a good deal skinnier than I am.
Just noticing that you are a little buxom.
Well, I'm fat as a hog. A lot of flab in my arms and all that sort of thing. I guess I was just lucky that the other girls in the Rocky Mountain region finals were all fatter than I am.
Well, we certainly wish you the best of luck in judging today. And our final finalist, our third one.
I'm George Wormsley from Rock Island, Illinois. I'm the Midwest winner.
Well, there must be some mistake, Mr. Wormsley. You're a man.
Well, I know that.
But this is a beauty contest, you know.
I know. But out in the Midwest, they score contest points for talent as well as beauty. And I pile up such a lead with my bird calls that none of the girls could catch me.
Well, why in the world do you want to enter the Bob and Ray Beauty Contest anyway?
Well, I'm a contest fan. I enter all kinds of contests. In fact, I've sent in several entries to your Druggist of the Month contest. But I don't think I'll win anything. Most of the druggists in my neighborhood are pretty seedy. They all close early and none of them deliver.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to ask you to withdraw from the Bob and Ray Beauty Contest. We didn't intend to have it open to men anyway, you see.
Well, now, hold on just a minute, Buster. You're not going to brush me off like that.
Well, we're running this thing. You're not eligible.
The mayor of Rock Island gave me a big bouquet of American Beauty roses just before I left home, and there was a big crowd down at the station to see me out.
I'm sorry that everybody's been inconvenienced, but you'll have to get out of the contest.
I won, fair and square.
Out, out.
You'll be hearing from my attorney.
You have two finalists, Buster. That's all, Miss Utah and Miss New Hampshire, Bob and Ray.
Okay, let's see. Oh, hey,
women, dig that doll.
Wait a minute. Look, that's it.
Well, now that's very rude.
Well, you wish fellows would whistle at you that way, don't you?
Well, not you.
Why not?
Well, look at you. If I weren't your sister... Who wrote this?
I have no idea.
If I weren't your sister, I wouldn't be seen at a dog show.
Well, thanks, Belle.
Well, it is the truth. Your face is...
Go ahead, say it. Look. Let's start again. Wally?
How'd you like the commercial I wrote?
No, well, you see, this is a little... The next
line. Well, that line,
your face
I don't.
Is all broken out.
When I say to him, well, it's the truth, your face is all broken out.
I have one of the smoothest faces in all radiodom, I think.
And for a statement of me to answer a statement like that is kind of ridiculous.
Oh, wait a minute. Here comes Mr. Putnam. Ask him about it.
All right. George, your face is all broken up.
How do you do it?
What's your secret?
I see you fellas look very serious, both of you. What's up?
Yeah. Well, I gotta be going. My next line.
My next line is I'm gone.
I think we ought to start over. Somewhere we got lost in right fielders.
Well, I don't know.
We haven't even mentioned the product we're getting to yet.
No.
You just talk about it, George, and we won't bother you at all.
Thanks a lot.
Now, it's time to check on the whereabouts of Wally Ballou, who today has gone up to Connecticut to an antique factory. There to talk with the owner and manufacturer. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
Ballou, here at the antique factory, which seems to be going at full tilt here today as we walk through period furniture of an old and bygone day. Mr. Fertnell, is that your name?
Fertnell, F-E-R-T-N-A-L-L, Fertnell.
I've never known a Fertnell before. You're probably the first Fertnell that I've ever come across.
Well, there are some other Fertnells here in town. There are, I don't know, I imagine there are Fertnells somewhere else in the country, and I would assume they're all relatives.
Kind of an antique name, in other words. And
so Randolph Fertnell came over here many, many years ago.
Uh-huh.
About 1911.
Tell me this, what are you manufacturing most here today? I noticed...
We're making 16th century colonial antiques here now. Old beds and old tables and chairs, closets,
That's a television cabinet there, isn't it?
What?
Is that a television cabinet?
That's right, yes, sir.
Well, is it authentic antique, or...?
Yes, it's reproduction. But we won't tell anybody that when we sell.
In other words, you sell these for the real thing.
Oh, sure. It's awfully hard. We put our own scratches on it, and we wax it.
We wax it, I think.
Yes, we do. And then we ship them out.
How about these wormholes in here? How do you simulate the effect of wormholes in the wood?
We use screwdrivers. We also use little drills. And sometimes if we can find a good termite, we'll put them to work on a piece of wood.
Uh-huh. And these pieces, I understand, bring a pretty good price.
There are, you know, antique fanciers who will pay quite a bit of money for one of these phonies.
Uh-huh. And without even knowing that it's not the original piece.
No, but they have just as much enjoyment as though George Washington had actually sat on the chair.
Well, now, for instance, this television cabinet, do you tell people that this goes back to 1600, 1700?
No, we don't. We don't mention it at all.
Now, has anybody ever raised the point that they didn't have television back then?
Yes, but we say that it was... when the older folks use it, it was to keep dishes in or something like that. And we have hired four gentlemen to actually sleep in the bed one night or to sit on a chair or to look in the mirror or some such. We have a Benjamin Franklin working for us. We have a George Washington. We have a James Madison. And we have a Roland E. Fleuring.
What'd you do, buy up Goodson Todman's old file?
What do you mean?
The name's the same.
That's it. That's where we got some of those names.
Uh-huh.
And these fellas, you take George Washington. He comes up here and he sleeps in the bed. And we can actually say that George Washington slept in that bed.
Here we've seen the actual bed that George Washington slept in.
That's right. This George Washington is an 11-year-old kid from Skaneateles, New York.
Here at the Fertnell Antique Factory in Fertnell, Connecticut. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, sir, and I'm sure we've learned something.
Saluting James Buchanan with a story. Wait just a minute. Hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
No, this is Bob.
How are you? Hey, look, this is Steve Bosco.
Hey.
Get off the phone with
Hi,
you.
Steve.
I want to talk to Bob.
No, this is Bob.
Bob?
Steve. Yeah.
It's Steve. Steve
How
Bosco.
Are you? Where are you?
How are you?
Bob.
How is everything going?
Huh?
Hello.
I can't
hear you. Operator. I'm going to get off there.
No,
hello.
No, I can hear you all right.
Oh, Bob?
Yes,
this
hello.
Is Steve Bosco.
How are you, Steve?
How's everybody?
Well, you sound good.
Real... Where's the bell, huh?
Fresh and clear, yeah.
Well, we're having a wonderful...
You must be living the good life, huh?
Operator, I've been cut off here. Cut in, please.
No.
Hello, operator. Look, this is an important call.
We've got a call from Steve Bosco on the wire,
why
ladies
can't
and gentlemen.
I put through one simple call?
The operator is having a little bit of difficulty with the operator. I can hear him.
Hello, Bob?
Hello?
Hello there. This is Steve Bosco.
Yeah.
Bob, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
How's everybody?
Good. You sound clear and fresh. You must be living the good life, huh?
Well, we're having a wonderful spring season time down south this year, Bob.
Oh, you're in Florida now, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I made all the year rounds, all the training camps out in Arizona and down Florida.
Wonderful. It's going to be a big year for baseball, and we hope
well,
that...
Well, I think so. I'm a little amazed, though. I was watching the Dodgers down in Miami play one of those tilts. I was amazed to see their caps.
What do you mean?
Well, they have the initials of Love Alston on them this year, and I'm a little confused by all
no,
that.
No, that's Los Angeles. Steve?
Hello, Bob?
No, hello.
Will you get off the phone right
now?
Let me talk to Bob.
You're on the wrong track, Steve.
Good, Ray. It was good to talk with you, but put on Bob, will you?
This is Bob.
Hi, Bob. Steve.
Yeah, well, look.
Hey, you know what the Dodgers are wearing on their hats?
Yeah,
year?
L.A.
Yeah, Love Alston.
No.
How's everything going
look,
for you?
Will you check up during the week?
I was in Arizona, and I saw the Giants, too.
Yeah.
They got Spring Perillo on their cap this
year.
Yes,
okay. Well, look, get your facts straight and then call back next week, will you, please?
Bob?
Yeah.
A little trouble.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, the district attorney down here has given me till 5 o'clock to cough up $380.
Well, I just finished saying you're living a good life down there. You,
so
you're
would you send
straight and narrow.
$380, please, for the most expensive hotel in Sarasota?
We'll talk to you after we sign off, all right?
Thank you.
Look, you can't keep this kind of thing up all back in
time. Ray, will you be quiet, please?
This
is Bob.
Steve Bosco.
Look, Steve, hello?
You just can't keep charging stuff to us.
Hi, how are you? This is Steve Bosco. Hello? Hello, this is Steve Bosco rounding Fair Beach, thrown out at home.
Monitors raving. No, that's roving reporters. Bob and Ray are down at the waterfront.
Sir, first of all, your name, please.
Captain Angus LaRue.
Captain LaRue, and this is your giant boat that we're standing on, I understand.
Well, it's not so much of a giant. It's more or less the queen of the seas.
Queen of the seas. And what kind of a boat is this?
Well, we like to call it a luxury sightseeing boat. That's what we're going to call it. As soon as we get it finished.
Oh, in other words, you're just refurbishing it now, is that it?
Well, more or less, we've got to get them big tanks removed. Got to scrape down the decks a little bit. And go over the whole thing with paint and disinfectant.
Mm-hmm.
Then we think we'll be ready for the summer festival here in New York to take folks around, see the sights in the harbor.
You're going to just take them around New York Harbor, up the Hudson River and the East River and so forth?
That's right.
And what kind of a boat is this?
Well, it's a reconverted garbage scow.
Oh.
I picked it up at a pretty good price.
How long will it take you now to get this thing ready?
Well, we figure another week or so we'll be ready to take our first load of customers for a kind of a trial spin.
Well, will you air this for a long period of time? I mean, just let the wind blow over it.
Well, she's outdoors all the time, you see, and that helps it.
Yes.
And I'm going to have my new quarters up above there.
You'll
up
be
the
up
fresh
with...
air.
Uh-huh. And how many people will you be able to get on here?
About 23, we think.
Is that standing up, or will it be...
23 standing up.
Standing up. And will you serve food, or...
Yes, we're going to have a fine commissary aboard. That's right over there where they're pulling those tanks out.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to have soft drinks, beverages, sandwiches.
Gee, I'd love to continue this, sir, but I don't think we have the time. Nor the inclination, really, because we must get back
to... Well, I know you're busy back there in the radio.
That's right. In our radio business, we're very, very busy.
Yes.
Thank you, Captain LaRue. It's been
You'd
a pleasure.
You'd like to come on the maiden ship down the cruise?
No. Thank you very much.
All right.
Appreciate the offer.
Right.
Now back to Radio Central.
Well, we're on, Ray. They've thrown the signal to us there. I don't know just what we're supposed to do at this particular time.
I don't either.
Ray.
Oh, hi, Wally.
It's Wally Ballou, ladies and gentlemen.
I'd like to have you meet another member of my family.
Well, I would love to.
Last week, on my broadcast from a fire engine factory, I introduced my son, little boy Ballou.
That's right.
Now I'd like to have you meet my wife, Holla. Holla, this is Ray Goldie, Bob Elliott.
Hello.
How do you do,
Hello.
Holla Ballou.
That's right.
Yeah.
She came in to see how...
I wanted to see how all this was done.
How all this was done and how radio worked.
I've been listening to it all the time, ever since while he was on the air.
Well, I should imagine you're very proud of your husband. He's covered a great many noteworthy and newsworthy events in his career with us.
Yes, we're all very proud of Wally, of Waldo.
She listens to all my broadcasts, tapes them at home.
I have a tape, and I tape Walden's works.
Then what do? Sit down on a Sunday night and
That's
listen
right.
to all of them?
Well, then the only way you can approve is to listen to yourself.
We got four complete 12-inch reels of nothing but Baloo interviews.
That's right, and we thought maybe someday they'd be worth a lot of money.
Well, I don't know just how they'd be
covered
worth.
Almost every aspect of American life.
Well, of course he has.
Industry on the march, scientific discussions with important people.
Second only to W.W. Chapman, I've been told.
I believe
so. Well, that may be or may not be true. I don't know. Where's the little fella today, the tyke?
Who?
Little boy Baloo.
Oh, he's gone to a movie.
So we got to pick him up later. He just wants to see how radio works. And how sound effects made, that kind of stuff.
Where do you folks live, Wally? I don't think we've ever pinned you down. Do you live around New York, or do you
live in the city at the moment?
Oh, you have a townhouse there.
Well, it's not really a townhouse, it's a basement.
Well, that would be considered a townhouse.
In town?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in town.
It's so much easier to have a base of operations centralized.
You use your apartment for your work, your research. For your research.
No, we sleep, eat there.
I see. Well, what's your next big story? Can you tell us anything about that?
Huh?
Can you tell us anything about what you're planning to cover?
Are you looking at me? Because I don't have any plans.
No, I was looking at the...
Well, he doesn't tell me much. He's gone so much of the time.
I don't have any plans when I get my assignment.
Hold everything, friend.
That's right. Stop whatever you're doing, because this time I think the makers of Bob and Ray stuff have really done it.
I know they have. They've added another to the list of things you can be immune to.
Now, you can be immunized to typhoid, typhus, and a host of other diseases, but now, thanks to you-know-who, you can get diplomatic immunity.
You heard right. Now you can get diplomatic immunity.
A lot of you probably are saying that diplomatic is not a disease, and you're right, it's not.
But did you know that all diplomats from foreign lands are immune from income tax and such other legal scourges as parking and speeding tickets and prosecution for a wide assortment of other petty crime?
Well, that's to say, upon presenting the credentials of their respective countries, they cannot be arrested or detained in any way.
Great, huh? Well, how have we, two lovable but uninfluential radio broadcasters, gotten such immunity? And how can we offer it to others, you're asking? And well, you might.
We've gotten it through the simple expedient of setting up our own country on a small island just outside the legal limits of the continental United States.
This country we've named Transylvania because up till now, it was only the name of a fictitious country used in Dracula pictures. Therefore, it sounds familiar, and most people think they know where it is.
We've also set up a Transylvanian embassy in an old store in the low-rent district of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C.
Our application is in for U.N. membership, and we're thinking of joining the Cold War on the side of the free world. So you can see, we're really in the diplomatic swing of things.
But now, what other benefits accrue to those having our diplomatic immunity other than living in a state of mild lawlessness, responsible only to Transylvania, which couldn't care less?
Well, the benefits are many. First of all, your name is put on the mailing lists of all the more popular countries, so that you are constantly being invited to important diplomatic functions and lavish embassy parties.
You get to meet hundreds of interesting people, travel around the world, all expenses paid, to look at dams, roads, and other monuments to progress.
I'll tell you that, but Transylvania has applied for and may be the recipients of generous foreign aid. The money to be used to build a giant hotel, cabana club, gambling casino on the island. This will be used for you and your loved ones should you, by abusing your privileges, be expelled from the United States.
With your Bob and Ray immunity kit, you get free of charge, besides your passport and other official-looking documents, a set of diplomatic license plates with the abbreviation DPL, a book on protocol with chapters on bowing and scraping, cheek-kissing, heel-clicking, and Yankee-baiting.
A sash to wear with the formal clothes you'll have to buy in Transylvania's national colors. Persimmon, burnt umber, and cerise. Do you like them?
Finally, a collection of bright, shiny medals, including the coveted Order of Count Basie.
Now, we still have a few legal loopholes to plug up on this thing.
Like possible loss of your American citizenship?
However, we have every reason to believe they'll be cleared up and cleared up soon. So, we're taking applications now. If you're interested, simply write on a card, "Make Me Immune, Bob and Ray," and mail it to Transylvanian Consulate, Dallas.
And tonight, as you know, or rather this week,
The New York Yankees opened their 1969 season. So Bob and Ray thought it might be appropriate tonight if they turn over some of their allotted time to their sports director, Biff Burns. They tell me he has an interesting guest. So come in, Biff.
Hi, sports fans, and welcome to the wonderful world of different sports. Tonight we do have a very different sort of a guest in the studio.
Biff, how come you're doing your show from a TV studio and not up at Yankee Stadium in Shea like you usually do?
Well, we had a little trouble with the press pass, and NBC was kind enough to give us their facilities to do our show with.
I get it.
Let me introduce you first. The gentleman here with me is Eddie Jablonski, and he's the baseball equipment manager for the...
Well, don't mention the team. They said I can only go on with you, providing we didn't mention the team that I'm with.
Why'd they say that?
Well, they say you don't know beans about baseball, and you're giving the game a bad name.
Uh-huh. Well, they got a right to their own opinion. Sorry, the management feels that way about it, Eddie.
Well, it's not just the management, but the players feel that way, too. Uh-huh. I mean, you're deciding to have me on, for instance. Was because you couldn't get a player, right?
Well, that's about the size of it.
That's right.
Speaking of size, let's get around to the wonderful world of baseball equipment managers. You've been up in the majors how long now?
This is my third year in the majors with the baseball and the gloves and the uniforms and the bats and the catcher paraphernalia and stuff like that.
How about the rosin bag?
The rosin bag is responsibility of the home club. Now, when we're at home, the rosin bag is out by the mound.
Uh-huh.
And I'm always in charge of the tie rack. That's always my responsibility at home or away.
Right. Tie rack. Now, you started out in the minor leagues. Could you tell us how that compares to the Big Apple up here in the major leagues?
Oh, all the difference in the world.
Yes. Would you tell us about it?
I'd rather not. Forget those days in the minors.
Well, I think a lot of the viewers out there might be interested to know just how it was with a minor league club.
Well, one of the big problems in the minor leagues is that the player only has the one uniform, home and away, see?
Uh-huh.
And on those bus rides, we don't have time to send the uniforms out to be cleaned. So,
It was kind of an aesthetic problem.
Not that. It's just that the bus gets pretty gamey, you know?
Well, I suppose that all of that has changed now. You're up in the big time. What do you find your biggest problem with equipment managing is in the major league?
Well, the team I'm with, the...
Don't mention the name.
Thank you. They have the name of the player on the back up over the numbers, see?
Uh-huh.
And I'm busy getting the names on and off of all these new players coming and going, yeah.
They tell me you've got an interesting anecdote to tell us about that.
Well, yeah, towards the tail end of last year, they brought up this pitcher, lefty Schechten Lusengard. And he was going to come up that night and pitch, and I had to get his name on. I had to start under one arm and go clear across and under the other arm.
Oh, I didn't see what's going to happen. You missed it, huh?
All you could see was acting loose.
Uh-huh.
And I put the 12 on upside down. Well, I tell you, when he went on the field, the fans were in hysterics.
I can imagine.
And,
that certainly is a funny anecdote and one that needed...
Well, Schechten Lusengard didn't think it was so funny. He was so mad at them laughing at him that he couldn't find home plate. He was back in the minors 1 hour after the game.
That's about the quickest trip up.
Another story. One time I misread the schedule, and I sent the equipment to the wrong city.
Oh, boy, they have to cancel the game?
No, our boys played in street clothes. You probably read about it, didn't you?
No, I don't believe I did. I want
to lost the game. We lost the game because our boys were afraid to slide their Sunday suits.
For any of the youngsters looking in who might look forward to a career as an equipment manager, what advice
do you have? No equipment. Every time you see a glove, pick it up. Get to know rosin bags, tie rags, bats. Get to know how to stack them. And just get to know equipment.
Right.
It's a fine, interesting time.
I want to thank you very much, Eddie Jablonski, for dropping by here today. It's been a real pleasure to have you in the sports room. This is Biff Burns saying, so long. Thank you very much, Johnny. It is rather an auspicious occasion because this is the first Bob and Ray lucky phone call for 1969. And from all of the telephone books around the country, we have picked a name at random. That name happens to be a gentleman who resides in Pierre, South Dakota. I think our operator has him on the phone now. Are you there, Mr. Thomas E. Roth?
Yes, Roth. The name is pronounced Roth.
Mr. Rock, you live in Pierre, South Dakota?
Pronounced Pierre.
Pierre, South Dakota.
Pierre, South Dakota. We don't give it the French Pierre, no.
You know, you're the recipient of the first Bob and Ray monkey phone call for 1969.
Terrific.
You feel pretty good about it. When was the first time that you had an inkling that we were going to be talking with you tonight?
Well, last night when the big truck came in and they brought up all the cables and put in microphones.
That was when you knew you'd been selected.
That's right. We were pretty excited about it.
I think my director out there told me this afternoon that they redid your kitchen for you.
Yes, and the air conditioning, the whole house, and everything.
How do you feel?
So delighted with that.
Feel pretty good about that.
Yes.
Of course, that comes out tomorrow. You know that. Just for the show. Is your wife there with you, Mr. Rhodes?
She's out in the new kitchen, huh? She's out there now.
Has she
You're
heard...
not going to get the paper,
Apple. Has she heard that you're the recipient of the lucky Bob and Ray phone call?
Yeah, we knew it all night. I've been talking about it all day.
I'll bet. What?
Ethel wants to know what's so lucky. What are we going to
get? I want to ask you a couple of questions. What do you do out there in Pierre, South Dakota, Mr. Rock?
I'm in public relations business out here.
Is there quite a call for that out there?
Well, not like in New York, no. But, I get brilliant in the paper for Hog Farmers. And, like so-and-so had a party, so-and-so entertained so-and-so.
Like to have
so-and-so
a name.
Had a tea and so-and-so forth.
They like
things
to have
like
a
that.
Name,
yeah.
Sure. Well, we find that wherever we go, New York.
Bob, Ethel here wants me to find out what's so lucky. What are we going
to
get?
I think people all over the world like to see their name in print, even if it's just for some minor thing like that.
People all over the world like to see their name in print. I suppose that's true.
It's been beautiful weather back here today. Really felt like spring and summer right around the corner. How is it in Pierre?
I'm sorry. Ethel, it was a nice day. What's so lucky?
We're speaking with Thomas E. Rock. Tommy Rock. Here, South Dakota, the recipient of the first Bob and Ray lucky phone call for 1969.
Well, Ethel here wants to know what's so lucky. What are we going to get?
Well, you realize the odds, Tom, against our picking your name from all of the phone books all over the country. There must be millions to one. Millions to one odds that you'll get that. You are lucky, and we certainly congratulate you on being the recipient of our first call this year.
Yeah.
If you get to New York, be sure and give us a call, will you?
Certainly will.
Thanks very much, Mr. Rod, and that's our first lucky phone call before 1969. Thomas E. Rod, here, South Dakota. We've always had a great interest in music. Tonight we have a top songwriter here with us to help us keep in contact with the musicians, the men who make music. He is a great lyricist, and I'm sure his name will be familiar to all of you when I introduce Harold L. Yogi Frelinghuysen.
James M. Yogi
Frelinghuysen. Where'd you get that nickname Yogi?
I got hit in the face by a screaming foul ball off the bat of Yogi Berra one time. Oh. And they always call me Yogi ever since.
And is that when you went into the music business?
I had to be humming through the jaw that way. Uh-huh. I was up in wires for about six weeks.
Well, now, Harold, you've written...
I was down back at first base. He pulled it.
Well, we want to get
going for the fences.
We want to get to one of your songs real fast, because I understand from the great ones that you have written,
yes.
Your holiday songs are the best. You had one for Father's Day.
I specialize in those holiday songs. Yes, I have one for Mother's Day. I have one for Father's Day.
Mother's Day, I remember, went, my old lady is one heck of a gal.
Yeah, my Father's Day song started, "You may be a jerk, but to me, you're my old man."
Yeah. I think we'll always remember that one.
Thank you.
And, of course, you've done Thanksgiving Day songs. And tonight, you brought us a George Washington birthday song. Very appropriate. And friends are going to have a chance to preview it right here for the first time, without music, of course. And we'd like to have your opinion on it.
Without the music.
Without the music. Kind of a musical appetizer of things to come.
I'll just say the words.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, holidays may come and holidays may go, but, brother, give me Washington's birthday. It's a little bit of all right in there. I don't mind Christmas, and I don't mind the 4th of July. But when I know Washington's birthday is here, then, boy, I'm right up in the skies. Washington's birthday is a peach of a day for me. And I know that Washington's birthday will be a peach of a day for you. Washington's Firth.
Wonderful. Harold L. Frelinghuysen. James M. Frelinghuysen, one of the top lyricists in the musical business along Tin Pan Alley today.
Holidays may come, and holidays may go. But, brother, when I know it's Washington's birthday,
well,
I'm really on the go. It's a peach of a day.
What is this you're doing? That's not the same thing you did before.
Well, it's the second chorus. Arbor Day may be okay, so may the 4th of July. But when I know it's Washington's birthday, I hope that you'll be with you and I.
Thank you very much. James L. Froiling.
James M.
For dropping by. And now back to our home studio.
This is Johnny Braddock welcoming you to Sportsophone. You all know the game. I'll start describing a famous sports figure, and as soon as you think you know who it is, call me Johnny Braddock here at Nimbutol 73984. And the first correct answer will win a ticket. All right, now, when this sports figure was around...
The answer is Big John Boomer.
No, it's not.
What do you bet it is, you crook?
When this sports figure was 6 years old, he or she suffered a severe knuckle injury.
I think the sports figure is Knuckles Hardesty.
No, ma'am, it isn't. And the name of Knuckles Hardesty is unfamiliar to me. May I know who he is, ma'am?
Well, what difference does it make if I don't win, you sap?
Well, because it's important I know all the figures in the sports firmament, ma'am.
Well, you can whistle for it, Braddock. I think you keep changing the story every time you think someone's going to guess the sports figure just to save a ticket.
Well, thank you for your many kindnesses, ma'am.
It's fine.
And when this boy grew up, this boy from Manassa, he was involved in a heavyweight fight for the championship, where a long count was a big factor.
That's Jack Dempsey, the Manassa Mauler. And you can send the ticket to Mr. Peter Gatewell, 1610 Ocean Drive, Belt, Iowa.
And later, this sports figure from the same town as Jack Dempsey dreamed a dream as he watched Jack Dempsey and Gene Tunney fight. He dreamed of baseball, and he joined the Brooklyn organization where he was known as the Little Colonel.
Oh, that's Pee Wee Reese, the Little Colonel who played shortstop for the Brooklyn Dodgers. After you tell me what the ticket's for, Johnny, send it to me, Edith Selwyn, care of E. Selwyn, 68 Arid Street, Far Rockaway, Long Island.
Well, the ticket's for the bicycle show up at the Pedal Auditorium, but you don't get it, Edith Selwyn, because you're wrong.
Thief.
Be that as it may, the boy who joined the Brooklyn organization was little, and indeed a colonel. But he was hired by the Brooklyn Club as an armed bleacher guard. But that wasn't enough for him. He changed his name, left the Brooklyn organization, and became known as the Splendid Splinter.
All right, it's got to be Ted Williams, famous for his valuable service to the Boston Red Sox.
And at that logging camp where this boy became a wood tester and was known as the Splendid Splinter for his ability to recognize prime lumber, this boy grew to manhood, 5 feet one, 106 pounds. And it was there he thought of horse racing, plunged into the horse race business, and over the years won many popular races. His first name is Eddie, and his last name begins with the letter A.
Eddie
Arcaro. No, Edwin Adamson, trainer of Shovel's Pick, winner of the Futurity, the Grand Stake, and the big one, the Run for Cover Free-for-All. And that's about all the time we have here. Be with us soon and guess again on Johnny Braddock's Sportsophone.
Did you say you're going to call in Baloo today?
Yeah, Wally Baloo is out, friends, in the famous Bob and Ray traffic airplane. He's flying all over just to see what the traffic situation is. We don't know what part of America he's in right now, so come in, please, Wally Baloo.
Wally Baloo from the Bob and Ray traffic plane. A survey of traffic for the upcoming weekend. And I might say I appreciate the opportunity you're giving me to broadcast from your plane.
Wally, we don't know how often we'll be able to call you in.
Watch it, John.
Wally.
Will you please?
Wally, did you just do a spin or something there?
My pilot did. George.
Well, yeah. Well, Wally, what is the traffic picture?
What's that?
I say, what is the traffic picture?
Wait a minute, Ray, until I just kind of get my bearings here.
Righto.
I dropped my papers. Oh! George, I wish you'd keep it on an even keel while we're broadcasting.
Wally, I know you're having difficulties here, but there are people listening who want to know what the traffic situation is, so if you could forget your own discomfort, possibly, and tell us exactly what's happening on the highways, we'd appreciate it.
Well, at the moment, I'm in the vicinity of the Holland Tunnel, and the traffic as normal on a weekend, Friday, beginning of a weekend. It's rather heavy, Ray.
Yes, I'm listening, Wally.
Huh?
Wally?
Yes.
Engineer, I think there's a breakdown here. I can't hear
George, it. George, don't do that again.
I don't think I can hear the report from the airplane. Wally? Hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh.
I'm just talking to my pilot, George.
Yes.
He has a very funny sense of humor.
Well, what can we look forward to in traffic? I mean, how far away or how far can you see from where you are?
I can't see too far. It's fairly hazy. Where we are... Oh. This is Radio's Wally Ballou returning it to Bob and Ray in New York.
Wally Ballou in the famous Bob and Ray traffic plane flying somewhere over America this week in New York, I guess.
And I'll try to make a better
cut it, engineer, please. We don't want any more. Engineer, please. Great. Yes.
Now then. I think right now we should play those tapes that were brought in by Wally Ballou.
That's right. This is the 4th of July parade description that Wally and his broadcasting partner, Artie Skirmahorn, covered. Was this on the air at all, this broadcast?
It was made for use today. I haven't heard it, though.
Okay. Well, is the tape ready to go? Okay, let's hear it.
This is radio's highly regarded Wally Ballou, winner of 16 Diction Awards, greeting you from the 1959 4th of July parade here in New York City. Before describing any of the activity here, I'd like to introduce and call in from his vantage point my broadcasting partner, Artie Skirmahorn. Can you hear me, Art?
Skirmahorn here. Thank you, Wally. Yes, this is Artie Skirmahorn, the CBS radio haired animal announcer, here to assist Wally Ballou in the broadcast of the annual 4th of July parade.
Artie, this is Wally Ballou again from my vantage point. I hated to interrupt you, but there is a van rounding the corner, heading across. Let's go down and pick up. No, I'm afraid we missed that music. Is there anything going on at your point, Artie?
Up at this end, Wally, we have a group of children parading by now, and there's, yes, a band in back of them. So, engineer, let's swing down into... Same thing seems to have happened here, Wally. Back to your vantage point.
Better luck next time, Artie Skirmahorn. I was going to ask you... Oh, wait a minute. There is a band now, and I think if we swing our parabolic microphone down, we'll catch it. A little bit. Fine. Artie, can you describe the view that you're looking at right now?
Hello? Yes, Wally, I could. It is a beautiful day. I can count, let me see, must be 15 bricks placed one on top of the other. And this has been carried on in some sort of a sequence so as to make what I would call a wall.
Artie, excuse me, this is Ballou again. I think you're describing the wall. If you turn around, I think the parade is behind you, Art. Will you try that, please?
Right. You're so right, Wally. That's true. And there's a band coming, so let's swing down now and pick up some of that exciting martial music, shall we?
You missed most of that, Artie. This is Wally Ballou back at my vantage point. Right now, there's a group of people just marching, not listening to any particular music. And I think now, let's swing down and pick up that band music. And there seems to be some trouble. 44th Street heads into...
Let me interrupt just a moment. There is a break here on 44th Street. It doesn't carry all the way through. It's necessary for the route of march to go through Grand Central Terminal. So that will be a delay, more or less. And there is a big delay as the parade seems to disappear.
Well, what do you think of that?
I don't think we should put it on the air at all.
No.
They didn't cover anything.
No, I don't think we'll broadcast that. Anyway, that was the big 4th of July parade.
And now, for all of you out there,
This is Tom Lowell, your world-renowned travel man, here to answer the questions sent in by travel buffs on this, the world of travel. I'm ready if you are, Ben Binder.
Well, I'm ready, Tom Lowell. Ready with your questions?
Fine, Ben. Go ahead.
All right. Mr. Lowell, is Africa safe?
Yes, Ben.
Mr. Lowell, what's the cheapest way to travel?
Well, deportation proceedings beats them all. But I guess the next cheapest way is to sneak aboard a ship. And when you're caught, tell the purser you never carry more than $50 on your person at any one time.
Oh, I see. Well, now, Mr. Lowell, what is the maximum allowable luggage weight for each passenger on Skycraft Airlines?
Well, Skycraft flies all over the world. And to make things easy for the passengers, their maximum allowable luggage weight comes to 4 pounds.
Well, why so little, Mr. Lowell?
Well, they feature the new lead fuselage for passengers' protection, and it weighs considerable.
Well, it would seem a plane like that would have trouble taking off.
Well, they use runway 6 at Idlewild, and that's the runway that goes all the way to National Airport in Washington. And usually the plane becomes airborne some 8 or 9 miles away from Washington.
Well,
plenty of room for a nice takeoff.
Yes. Then which is the best airline for weight allowance, Mr. Lowell?
Any of the airlines which use lots of aluminum in the manufacture of their aircraft will do.
All right. Well, now, Mr. Lowell, what's the difference between an alligator and a crocodile?
None that I can see. The alligator might possibly make a better shoe, but I'm not sure of that.
And what's the most interesting sight to be seen in the British Isles, Mr. Lowell?
The guarding of the change, which takes place at the Bank of England. It's a very moving ceremony, one you don't want to miss.
Well, how much can a person lose at the gaming tables in Monte Carlo?
Well, it varies with the individual, how much he can afford to lose, how much he wants to lose, etc.
I see. Well, now, which is the best language to speak when visiting Sweden, Mr. Lowell?
For interesting results, Spanish is the best language to speak when visiting Sweden.
In the world of travel, what are sea legs?
I don't know.
Where can one see the upcoming 1956 Olympic Games?
They can be seen in London in 1952.
I see. Well, Mr. Lowell, is it possible for a person to walk across the United States on foot?
Not with Hawaii in the picture, it isn't.
And how did you celebrate the acceptance of Hawaii as the 50th state in the Union, Mr. Lowell?
Well, I was here in New York City with my family when I heard the news. And what with the millions of people dancing in the streets, the parades, the crushing crowds. Well, what with all the noise and din that lasted through the night and on into the next day, I thought it best that we stay inside the apartment.
That's what I did, too. And thank you, Tom Lowell, answering Travel Man, for your much-needed information.
I think we have just about enough time today to play a little studio game for the first time. We haven't had a chance to do this, and all of the lovely ladies here look as if they're anxious. Could we have that little old lady that I tripped over before when I was in the studio?
All right, yes.
Come on up here, Mother. And, two others. The other two,
Can I come up?
Well, I asked for ladies. I suppose so. There, none of the other ladies seem to want to play. So it'll be between you, Art, and,
Okay.
And the little old lady.
Mrs. Clayton Belmore.
Ms. Belmore, you know how we play this little musical game. You have to take your shoes off and run. When you hear the bell, you...
Oh, if I ever take them off, I'll never get them on again.
Well, all right. That's up to you. I thought it would give you a better chance.
Well, all right,
You run, when you hear the bell, you run from this microphone to the other end of the studio.
Yes.
Ring the bell there. Identify the song that will be played at that point.
Right, all right.
Step on the balloon and then come back.
All right.
First one who gets here is the winner. You ready, Art?
I'm ready, sure.
All right. First...
I can beat that old lady.
Here we go. Start running now. All the way down to the far end of the studio. Who can identify that song?
I have it.
You have it, ma'am. Miss Belmore.
T for two.
T for two, I'm sorry, is wrong. Art, would you like to take a chance at guessing the tune?
Well, let me guess. Blue Moon.
Blue Moon is close enough. It was called Red Sails in the Sunset, but run back here now. The first one who gets back here wins. Oh, the little old lady fell down. Mrs. Belmore.
Well, I guess I win.
I guess you do by default or something.
What do I win?
Well, you don't win anything. It's just that you have the honor of having won our studio game. And,
That's awfully painful.
You'll have two tickets to one of next week's shows waiting for you.
So that's all, huh?
That's all there is to it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry about that, too, Mrs. Belmore.
Well, that's the way with games.
Sure.
It's been fun. Yeah. I've enjoyed it.
Enter into a game like that. A little round of applause for our two fine studio guests.
Well, say, we've had a
wonderful trip. We have better ones, I think.
Oh, yeah, we'll have some more games like that. Awfully sorry again, Mrs. Belmore. That must have stung. Mm-hmm.
Well, that would do it for today, wouldn't it?
Yes, it does.
Until tomorrow, then, this is Ray Goulding reminding you all to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumb.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Sports fans, this is Biff Burns in the Biff Burns Sports Room, ready to interview another outstanding figure in the sports world. In this case, our old friend Bill Hockey of the Indiana Mustangs, funky shortstop, who just this past week was sent down to the minors. Bill, I wonder if you could give a little of the background as to how your career seems to be going downhill at this point.
Well, I don't know as I'd use that phrase to describe my career, Biff. Going downhill. I don't like to think that that's what's happening to me.
Well, being kicked out of a top-flight team like the Mustangs and sent down there seems to me to be a little of a setback. How long were you with the Mustangs, Bill?
Well, I went to spring training with them this year, and they kept me up until they had to cut their roster back to 48. So to make room, they had to let me go.
Isn't it true, as a great many of the sports writers pointed out, that you suffered a lot of head colds?
Well, I seem to have been
kept
plagued
out of
with
spring
it.
Training quite a bit, didn't it?
I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why I didn't stick with the team because of all my colds.
Well, as we promised, Wally Ballou and Mary Magoon are at Putney, Vermont, Mary's old hometown, where she is going up in a private airplane to jump over Parker's pasture.
Going to jump over Parker's pasture.
Well,
she's going to jump into it.
Right into it. But it is a big pasture, though, Bob, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's going to try to hit a spot marked out in the pasture, as I understand it. Anyway, Wally Ballou is standing by in the aircraft now. He can tell us better. Come in, please, Mr. Ballou.
A free fall, and Mary is going to try and demonstrate it here for the radio audience. I'm seated in the co-pilot seat of this three-seater airplane with Cliff, the pilot. And have you taken many people, Cliff, have you taken many people up on trips of this sort where they're going to jump, free-fall parachute jump?
First one of these assignments I've ever had. The last assignment I had like that was skywriting, really. And I lost that. I couldn't spell acetylsalicylate.
Well, this should be easier work. It's all just flying along in an easy course and telling Mary when we're over the jump area. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. But I'm a little concerned. She's quite an old biddy to be jumping out of an airplane.
She told us she'd done it before. I'm just going to lean over the seat here and have a few words with Mary Magoon, who is in the other or third seat of our airplane. Mary, are you nervous at all?
Yes, I must admit I'm nervous.
You have your parachute already strapped on. Is that one you packed yourself? Did you fold it and put it into the parachute case?
No, I got this at the store where they have these all packed. They're fully guaranteed. That's not my concern. My worry is, Wally, is just when to pull the ripcord after the free dive.
And you're going to try and soar like a bird. Yes, Cliff? Cliff, the pilot, wants to say something.
Mr. Goon to say toodly-doo to us.
Well, he's just about over the area, I guess. I can see. Yes, the pasture is... How high are we flying, Cliff?
We are at 10,000 feet.
10,000 feet over Parker's pasture.
Very, very high.
And, Mary, you have that little microphone around your neck?
How far up?
About 2 miles.
You have
the microphone around your neck with the portable transmitter, so we'll hear your report all the way down. And I guess, Cliff, it's up to you to give her the jump signal. The door is open.
Mary.
Get ready, Mary, and good luck.
Oh, boy.
She's looking over the side now.
Oh, I don't know if I will.
You may be able to hear the wind whistling by the door of the airplane.
One,
go.
All right.
Go ahead, Mary.
Indian brain.
No, it's Geronimo. Oh, she's gone now. There she's... We'll try to pick her up on the portable radio now.
Where's the course? Where? Oh, here it is. Yeah,
Mary, if you can hear me on your earphones, this is Wally Ballou in the plane overhead.
Are you safe?
Yes, we're circling and ready to head back to the airport.
Fine.
You pulled the chute open there in just about 12 or 13 seconds we timed you.
Well, that's the best I've ever done. And I'm not too far from the ground, although the wind seems to be carrying me a little off target.
You're not going to land...
Champlain.
You're not going to land in the pasture, that's for sure.
I'm in the New York State, easy.
And we'll see you,
Now I'm being blown back across Lake Champlain.
Hello, Barry. We're going to head back to the airport now. Good luck on your landing, and we'll try to spot you as soon as you land.
Well, goodbye, and I'm back. Where am I here?
Eddie?
Yeah?
Who's the lady?
She just landed in a parachute.
I don't like this at all.
Oh, if she gets wind we're making black market maple syrup, we'll be in real trouble.
She has copper written all over her face.
Yeah, let's get out of here quick.
Gentlemen, can you help me?
Sorry, lady, can't stop now.
Can you help me, please?
Come on, Charlie, let's go.
Come on.
You mean the...
And so our communication with Mary Magoon was halted there. She landed safely, and it'll be interesting to hear her report when she returns to New York.
Okay.